this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show. Hi, this is Craig Valentine. I want to welcome you to a special edition of Early to Rise Radio with Lewis Howes, one of our guest speakers at the Perfect Life Retreat. Now, Lewis is an old friend of mine. We met back in 2008, and you probably know him as the author of the New York Times bestseller, The School of Greatness. Now, recently I flew into LA and I went over to his famous podcasting studio in West Hollywood. That's where he's interviewed Grant Cardone, Brené Brown, Bedros Koulian, and dozens of other thought leaders and authors. So it was really cool to be there. And we talked for about an hour on how to build your morning routine for greatness. And he has one thing that he does every single morning that sets his mind right. So you get to hear about that. Plus, we talk about how to overcome the obstacles in your life, even if, like Lewis, you're from a small town and you've had a lot of obstacles thrown in your way. And then finally, the interview gets really, really awesome at the end as we talk about his exciting new book, The Mask of Masculinity. So if you're attending the Perfect Life Retreat in November, you're going to hear Lewis dive really deep into this topic, and you're also going to get a copy of his new book as our gift to you. And the cool thing is that Lewis makes another promise to all Perfect Life Retreat attendees at the end of this show, and you're going to want to stick around and hear that. So make sure you get your ticket to my big event on November 9th and 10th in San Diego. Just visit perfectliferetreat.com today, and you can even get a free ticket for a friend. All right, so let's jump into our interview and enjoy the show. Well, hey, Lewis, thanks so much for being here in your own home, having us come in and do the podcast. So we really appreciate that.
Yeah, man.
All right. So we actually met in 2008, believe it or not.
Was it 8?
I'm pretty sure.
It might have been, yeah. It was on a cruise ship, right?
No, we met through Carrie.
But wasn't it on her cruise, on the cruise ship, on her mastermind?
It was her mastermind either before or after the cruise ship one. It was in Arlington, Texas.
Wow.
And you were there with James.
Yeah.
Somebody had driven all the way from California. It must have been James. Yes.
It must have been James.
And he learned the hard way that Texas is a long way from California. Yes,
exactly.
But since then, you've had like a decade of dominance, a generation of greatness. So why don't you tell us about how you got down that path and maybe a little bit about your story, your Midwestern roots and all that great stuff. Man,
I'm a guy from Ohio that played football and loved to play sports. I played a little bit of professional football in the Arena League, but I got injured diving for a football, catching a ball. I actually dropped the ball, but I was diving to catch a ball. And I hit the wall and broke my wrist. And at the end of the season, I had to have surgery. And I thought it was going to be a quick recovery, but it was a six-month recovery in a cast. And then after that, it was about another year of just learning how to use my hand and arm again and get mobility back. So during that time, I was kind of just trying to figure out what I was going to do next. I thought I was going to go back to playing sports. The recovery process was too long to where I missed the next season. And then it was hard to come back a season later and really two seasons later. And I was kind of at a necessity point. I just needed to make some money because I was sleeping on my sister's couch. Didn't have a college degree yet. Didn't have really any skills applicable to business. And was living off of a few credit cards, just trying to figure it out.
What are you like 23 at that point? Even younger?
23. Yeah. 24.
Okay. Got it. Yeah.
And yeah, 23, I guess, at the beginning of it. And it was kind of this point where I was like, my sister, after about a year, she was like, okay, I think it's time you get a job or something. Like, you got to do something. You can't just sit here all day. Because I was really in a darker place where I wasn't sure, you know, what to do. My whole life, I was focused on one thing.
Was it because you felt like you had your identity taken away?
A lot of that, but I just didn't know what else there was.
Got it.
I was just so focused on one thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you tell a singer who loves to sing every single day, and they're performing all over the world, and then all of a sudden they're 23 and they lose their vocal cords. What do? They have no other skills. All they did was perfect this one craft, and then they can't use their voice anymore. Yeah. That's kind of how I felt like in football. It was just like, I didn't have any other backup plan. I didn't practice anything else. It was just, how do I get better, bigger, faster, stronger? Right. So, and I didn't really have, I never really had responsibility. I never had like, okay, you're going to work out, you're going to train, and then you're going to go get your side job. My dad was always like, go live your dream. Like, I'll pay you in the summers, in high school and college summers, to train all day, essentially.
Oh, wow.
Like, I'll take care of your food. I'll take care of you, like, staying at home.
Yeah, yeah.
So don't worry about getting a job. Just train and recover.
Yeah.
Because he knew how demanding the training was, which was amazing. It allowed me to, like, go all in. But it also... I didn't have any skills. I didn't have like, I never worked. I really didn't do any internships or anything like that. So for me, I'm a 23, 24 year old with a bum arm, you know, without a college degree in 2008, 2009, when the economy was pretty bad and people were firing people with master's degrees. So I was just kind of like, do I try to go get a job or do I try to figure out how to survive and make money on my own?
Yeah.
And I remember going to on Craigslist at the time and looking for job applications in sports marketing because I thought maybe I would like sports marketing stuff since I was in sports. And I got a job interview for this one local sports marketing company. And I remember vividly like getting ready to go to this interview. And I started to walk out the door to be on time. And I just remember being like, I can't go. Like I just couldn't go to this job interview because I had a feeling I was going to get it. Like I was so desperate that I was going to be able to like charm them or something to where they were going to be like, yeah, you're great for the job. And I knew that's not what I wanted in that moment. Like my gut was telling me like, don't go work there because that's not really what you want. I had this taste of this like lifestyle playing sports where I could go play and get paid and then kind of relax at night, you know? And I was like, I really want that lifestyle still. I don't want to go keep doing, I don't want to go do something I hate.
Yeah.
Or something that I'm just like, I have to do. So that's when I started getting into LinkedIn. When I met you shortly after that, I started like just building relationships on LinkedIn, connecting with people, trying to learn about how successful local business leaders were doing it. Like what were they doing that was working? What were they doing that got them to where they are? I was just curious about their process, about their routines, their habits, how they did it. And that kind of started my early interview days of just reaching out to people, connecting with them. And what I would always ask people is, you know, what's your biggest challenge right now that you're facing in your career, your business, when I would connect with them? And they would tell me, you know, I'm looking for a sales guy or I'm looking for like a COO or I'm looking for whatever, a designer, a photographer. And as I was building all these relationships, I was like, I just met like the top guy in Columbus last week. Let me connect you.
Oh, nice.
Or I just met like a great sales rep who's at this other company, doesn't really like it. Like, let me connect you. And I realized I had this gift for connecting people. That was like my talent. But it became super valuable over time. More and more people would reach out to me and say, hey, I know you have this large network. Can you introduce me to so-and-so? Can you connect me here? Do you know anyone who can do this? And so I kind of became a Rolodex for people.
It's like you built Lewis's list.
That's it. Exactly. Yes. Lewis's list on LinkedIn.
Right.
And I just started to figure out how to monetize it. You know, it's just like one guy asked me to show him how to do the same thing on LinkedIn and he paid me $100. I was like, wow, you're going to pay me to kind of optimize your profile. You know, another guy, I helped him get a job interview and he got the job. So he gave me some cash for that. I started hosting local networking events that I was promoting just on LinkedIn and they were free originally, but I had sponsors and then I started charging at the door. Then I started charging to get commission from the food and beverage sales at the restaurants I was doing it.
Yeah.
Then a friend was like, why don't we do a book together and teach people what you're doing on LinkedIn?
Right.
So I did that and started selling those. And I just started to figure out like, how can I make a little bit of money doing everything I'm doing?
Yeah. And then I think when we had met, you were starting to even go out, flying up to LA to start doing.
I started doing events all around the world.
Yeah. Wow.
I started like building these groups on LinkedIn because I realized people needed connections.
Yeah.
In specifically in cities. There weren't like these powerful business networking groups yet that I'd found. So it was easy for me to build these groups on LinkedIn in local communities. So in LA, Chicago, St. Louis, Cleveland, Columbus, whatever, New York, and they were growing exponentially. I think at the time, people just needed local groups to build their business. They needed, you know, leads. They needed quality people they could connect with.
Right. They needed salespeople to fill those jobs to solve their problems.
That's it. And so I was the facilitator for people.
Yeah.
Bringing people together, connecting them, whether it be in person, online with ideas, information. And that's kind of what I figured out early on that I could do. Yeah. I didn't think I had any other talent really at the time, but I was like, at least I can see what you need and find someone else's need and put you guys together.
Right. So you go back to that time when you were really struggling and before you went to that job interview, you know, what's, I'm sure there's somebody listening who's maybe not in that position, but struggling, frustrated, spinning their wheels.
Yeah.
What advice would you give them that helped you at that time to get through it?
Clarity is a powerful thing. And when we get clear on our vision and our purpose, even if it's for a month's time, even if it's for like a few months or a season of life, it gives us direction on some actions we can take then. When we have zero vision or clarity, it's really hard to take action in a forward progress.
Yeah.
And this is why I think what the work you guys do with the Perfect Day kit and book and exercises and everything you're up to really helps people get clarity. And that's the first step. When I didn't know what I wanted, that's when I was most afraid.
Right.
And I was doing a bunch of random things that didn't help anything. And I was constantly like, what am I doing? What am I doing? What am I doing? Until I figure out what I want to do, it's hard to give full engagement in something and feeling great about it.
Yeah.
So I think first is clarity.
Okay, great. And then, you know, so people realize they have some greatness, some skill, some value, some talent inside of themselves. How do you help them get the clarity on that?
For me personally, it's all about, I have people write out their perfect day. Yeah. I have people write down in detail, go in nature, find somewhere a quiet space, without technology, and write down what a perfect day would look like for you. Describe it for me. From the moment you wake up, where are you waking up? Who are you waking up next to? What's the look on their face? What do they say to you? What are you saying to them? Like in detail to try to feel what a perfect day could look like. From the moment you wake up to the minute you go to bed, what is that day? Describe it for me. Then, as an athlete, my whole background was formulated from structure as an athlete. In order to be the most creative and effective, I needed structure. So I learned this from my coaches. We would, at the beginning of every season, the best coaches would bring our team together and have, you know, back in the day, it was a chalkboard in the locker room, not a whiteboard. We'd have a chalkboard and we'd say, what is our vision for this season? You know, it's a 3 to 4.5 month season in football, baseball, basketball, whatever. And he'd say, what do we want to do, team? And we were like, we want to go to the playoffs. We want a championship. We want this. We want that. We want to win 10 games. Whatever it is, we would just start kind of talking about it. The coaches would have their opinion. We would have our opinion. We would talk about what's happening in the league, who are competitors, you know, what's really, you know, a big stretch for us, all these different things. with the skills and the talent we have for that season of time, what is possible for us and what's our dream? And we would come up with our team goals and vision, and we'd have it all up on the board. Okay, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. That means here's what our schedule is going to be every single day, right? In order to do this at the end of the season, each week, here are our milestones. And each day, we would walk into the locker room. Right when I get into the locker room after school, we would have an itinerary up, a schedule. Okay, it's 3:15, like get your pants on, 3:25, it's on the field. 3:27, you're stretching. It's from all the water breaks to the special teams, to the defense, to the, like the coaches talk, to whatever. We had it structured and organized. So there was no guesswork of what we were going to do or how we were going to execute on that vision. And so for me, I realized like, wow, when I know exactly what I'm going to do for the day, based on what I'm going to try to get for the week, based on what I'm trying to create for the season, I organize that for my life now. So I write down what a perfect day would look like for me. And then I write down, okay, from the moment I wake up every 10, 20, 30 minutes, what does my schedule look like in order to create that and make it come to life? How am I going to execute this every single day in order to reach those weekly, monthly, seasonal goals? And that's the way I look at it.
Awesome. Awesome. So now, you know, you travel a lot, but when you're home and you're doing the shows and all that stuff, how does your day tend to look for you to get maximum productivity?
It's kind of all over the place, to be honest, depending on what we're doing, just because I wish I could say I do all my interviews on Mondays, you know, before 4 o'clock or whatever.
Sure.
But because of all the people I interview and their schedule, it's just kind of like I get them in when I can. Mm. And I try to get them ahead of time so that I can have interviews out for weeks. But I really organize my, I try to organize my morning the way that I want it.
Yeah.
So that I set my, the rest of my day up for success. You know, my team is scheduling a lot of my calendar for me to make sure I'm available to create the things we need for our team goals, mm-hmm. our business goals. But in order for that to be successful, I feel like I need to be right in my mind, my emotional health, my physical health, and really have and just be more grounded. So that's why the first few hours for me is the most important. And I'm not perfect at it, but I really focus on working out in the morning.
Okay.
Even though it's harder for me in the morning because my body's still waking up, it's hard for me to shut off at 5, 6, 7 o'clock and go to the gym because I'm just still going.
Yeah.
And usually the way my business is, I'll finish the day, whatever, 5, 6, 7, and then it bleeds into dinner, meetings, and networking. And then, it, you know, it's 11 o'clock when I get home sometimes. And so I'd rather just get the thing done first. That is the most challenging.
Sure.
15 minutes of meditation for me every morning. I know people are talking about meditation all the time now. For me, it really doesn't matter what type of meditation you do. It, I have a process that I do for 15 minutes where I just listen to music, instrumental music, and I go through a breathing process. And I really allow my mind to explore and be expansive into what's possible for my life, for the future, for the day, everything. And it allows me to see myself, you know, in my meditation practice, this may sound a little weird, I see myself beyond the earth. I'm like in a whole nother galaxy, mm-hmm. looking down at the earth to a point where I can't see the earth anymore, to remind myself how big the universe actually is,
sure.
and how small my problems are every single day.
That's good clarity though.
Like how small and minuscule any stress I feel actually is when I can't even see it because I'm so far away from the earth. So for me, it just tries to remind myself of one, how big everything is and how expansive and how much available for me there is, but also how small these little things are.
Right. So you would come out of that, like even no matter how crazy your day is and you're going into a really busy time right now, you're just like, oh, okay.
It's not that big a deal. Even though I've got like this big event and a documentary and a book launch and a course launch or whatever and 5 interviews tomorrow, it's like, it's not that big a deal at the end of the day.
Right.
You know what I mean? If you have that perspective.
Right. And plus you're prepared and you're going to perform. Yes, and, yes. you know, yeah. if one thing goes a little bit off, you're totally cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome.
You know, well, I'm just not like, well, if it's not perfect, I'm going to be screwed. You know, I'm just like, it's going to be perfect how it is.
Exactly.
For what I'm ready for, it's going to be great.
All right. So what are one or two other things that, you know, just need to be in Lewis this mm-hmm. morning? Is it, you know, the coffee? Is it, you know, water first thing in the morning? A couple of things that people might want to consider adding into their days that have made a difference for you.
I would, you know, if I was playing a sport in like a dorm, that would be like my optimal way to live because like I think I kind of envy people in the military because there is such clear structure mm-hmm. every single day. And I feel like you can perform at your optimal level when you have that structure and supportive structure. Since I do travel and I've got other things, like I do the best I can with my structure to make sure I get the workout in and the meditation. I try different stuff with my body all the time. So sometimes I'll fast in the morning. Sometimes I'll have whatever, healthy breakfast, sometimes green juice, sometimes smoothie, like for me, I'm always testing that stuff just to how I'm feeling.
But it's those two things, those other two things.
Working out and the meditation, I think, are the most important. Gratitude is always something I'm doing just throughout the day.
Okay.
So gratitude before I go to bed, I think, is the most important thing before you go to sleep.
Yep.
I always share with my girlfriend what I'm most grateful for from the day. Mm-hmm. I feel like it helps me close the loop on the day.
Awesome.
In the morning, I try to do the same thing, what I'm excited about, what I'm grateful for.
Quick question. Yeah. So, you know, with all the stuff you have going on, in addition to the gratitude, how are you kind of shutting the mind off at night so you can fall asleep?
I would like to say that I shut all the lights off at 10 o'clock and turn my screen off and don't watch TV after 9 o'clock and all these things that we're told to do. But sometimes I watch a movie until late. Sometimes yeah. I'm watching a Netflix series that I just like fall in love with and I turn and you keep it on an extra hour.
Sure.
I've gotten really good at being able to turn it off when I need to. And
so even if you come home from one of those networking events, you met 5 people and you go, oh my gosh, this is like going to be even bigger than the new book. I mean,
yeah, I think in the last couple of years, I used to never be able to sleep.
Oh, okay.
Like, it used to take me forever to go to sleep.
Were you one of those hyperkinetic kids? Like just
yeah, super hyper, but I just would lay there. I would try to go to bed and I would just lay there for hours.
Right.
And I couldn't do it. But I've set up, you know, I've got Sean Stevenson coming here and set up my whole room and snake plants and blackout shades, and I keep it super cool. So I just feel like my conditions are set up for me to fall asleep easier. Mm-hmm. So that's, and I think just getting older, I don't know, I'm 34 now. And I think over the last couple of years, it's just like, okay, my body's ready to fall asleep. I think working out as hard as I do in the morning, early, helps me go to sleep.
Okay.
And that's why I think it's really helpful to like work out first thing, because my body, and I'm lifting hard, so my body, I just feel like it's just burning fat, you know, all day. You know what I mean? It's just like the more lifting I do, I just feel like it's burning fat. And I'm just like, man, it's just, it's a lot of work and energy. So, yeah.
Good. You're all set there. So, hey, what about, you know, your most creative time of day? Do you have a creative time of day, what I call magic time, where you're really productive? And if you do, how do you protect it in all this busyness? And if you don't, how do you manage to fit it all in?
Yeah, because don't you like write for like 2 or 3 hours every morning?
I write for at least an hour every morning.
Yeah, I remember hearing that about you. And I was like, gosh, I'm so envious of that. I think my most creative time is when I do nothing and when I sit back and stop working. Because, and also if I'm ever doing cardio, I know you hate cardio as well. But when I ever do cardio, I feel like I get really creative.
Okay.
For some reason. Just like being in that zone. Like
sure.
Ideas come up to where I just want to stop and like go execute.
Yeah.
But for me, there's actually a new book out. It's called like Bored and Brilliant.
Oh.
From this woman I'm going to interview actually soon. It's all about how to unlock your greatest creative potential by doing nothing. Mm-hmm. And I realize when I'm busy all day long, I'm not creative. It's when I take a walk with my COO, take a break and step aside from anything I'm doing and just allow myself to just, my friend Kevin Nations calls it the, what do you call it? The strategic art of, what did he say? Strategic fucking off. He said, it's like, you're just like going off, goofing around, playing around, but like your biggest ideas come there. And so for me, I try to go play Frisbee. I go throw the football, just like something to move the body.
Yeah.
And not just be sitting at a desk and being like, what's my next great idea? It's like really when I'm in motion, that's when I create the most powerful ideas.
Yeah. And I mean, that goes back to this book that I really love called Daily Rituals by Mason Curry. It's a really great book. And it just talks about how all these composers, all these people, they worked in the morning and then they basically went for like 3 hour walks every
day. Did nothing. Yeah. Just like allowed their mind to wander. And
yeah. And most people don't do that.
Yeah.
Because they just, you know, too dialed in.
My friend who is a very successful inventor, he would take walks for 1 hour, 2 hours every single day and he would get his best ideas. I would walk with him and we would just like brainstorm and talk about whatever. And he'd be like, oh wait, this just came to me.
Right.
And he would always want to go walk every single day. So I think there's something to being in motion. I think it's hard when you're working out really hard to be creative because you're so focused on just that pain. But if you're on like a light jog or a walk or a bike ride, I think that's when it comes.
Yeah. So how would you say that, you know, your Midwestern roots have helped you these days? Because I'm a big fan of Midwestern people. Yeah. They've always been my best customers in the workout world because they do the work, right?
They do it. How has it helped me, you think?
Yeah.
Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
You know.
So make you a little bit more relentless than the other person?
I don't know. I just feel like I've always been an underdog. I think maybe because I'm from the Midwest and I've always had that connection to an underdog feeling and like small town guy from Ohio. It's like where no one thinks they can do anything. I've always had this feeling like I'm going to do something, you know, I'm going to make a mark. I'm going to, you know, pursue my dream and try to help people along the way.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just a feeling. Yes. It's just like this desire. First, it was a desire to prove everyone wrong.
Got it.
And that's one of the most powerful desires to create results.
The chip on your shoulder. Bedros was talking about that yesterday in our mastermind. He's like, everybody in this room has a chip on their shoulder. You're here to prove something, and that's why you're so successful.
Yeah, yeah. Here's the thing, though. What I've learned for me personally is when I did everything to prove everyone else wrong and to be right and for me to win and for them to kind of rub it in their face, I achieved so many things, but it left me feeling very unfulfilled.
Sure.
Until a few years ago when I realized, wow, I can win and be successful and lift others up around me. And so now I feel so much more fulfilled by not trying to prove everyone wrong. I think, sure, there's a little bit inside of me that like wants to prove certain people wrong or whatever.
Sure.
But that doesn't serve me long term. And what serves me is when I'm doing it to really lift others up and to try to find a way to inspire as many people. Yeah. And that's when I feel I can sustain that energy a lot longer than just the pain and the fury of like the hate for all the people that bullied me or whatever, just right. like trying to like show off to them or something. So yeah, I just feel like early on it was to prove people wrong and to kind of have that underdog story. But now it's, I just feel like, who knows why I'm here and why you're here? I don't know. I still don't know.
Got it.
There's got to be a reason, mm-hmm. and I want to make the most of it. I did a post this morning on Instagram that said, my mom worked too hard for me not to be great.
Got it.
And I love that saying because who knows really the reason why we're here? But I know my parents worked their asses off, sacrificed a ton. And so just for that alone, I want to make sure that there are no excuses in my way, that I'm not going to allow any fear or insecurity hold me back from doing something cool, fun, interesting, yeah. worthwhile, uplifting for other people. So I'm just focused on those things as opposed to constantly questioning, well, why am I here? Why did this happen? Why did that happen? Like, who knows? I'm here. Let's make the most of it. And that's what I'm looking to do.
Beautiful, beautiful. Now, I always say that Joe Polish is the most connected person that I've ever met, but you are giving him a run for his money these days.
And he's so, pretty connected.
He is. And so, you know, you go back to that whole LinkedIn experience where you were the generous guy, you were connecting people. What, and now you realize the value in uplifting people. What advice would you give to anybody out there who is, whether they're a network business or whether they're a mastermind business or coaching business or just the type of person who wants to be a great salesperson and help the other people in their organization?
Listen. Listen to what people need. Listen to what they're saying and what they're not saying. Mm-hmm. And I think one of my skills I've become good at is listening to that, specifically what people are saying and what they're not saying.
And what's an example of where someone has not said something that spoke so loudly to you?
I mean, it's just reading energy as well. It's just reading, like, you know, if someone's saying, well, yeah, I really love, I don't know, my marriage and my kids, and I'm just having a great time with it. But you can tell there's like something missing in their tone and their yeah. energy, that they're not looking you in the face. They're not smiling. There's just like a feeling about it. You're like, okay, well, something's missing here. Mm-hmm. So it's just trying to dig into that. Like, what is that? What's really, is anything missing in your relationship? Is anything missing in your life? Is there anything, do you feel held back in any way because you have a family? So it's just kind of asking certain questions to really pull out like what else there could be available for them.
Sure. Because sometimes those are those comments where everything's great is really a cry for help,
exactly.
You would say.
Who knows? Who knows? It's just reading the energy.
Got it.
And trying to be aware. And I think the reason why I became decent at that was because I didn't feel like I had much to say early on. Mm-hmm. Growing up, I was in school. I was, you know, in the special needs classes. It was really hard for me to read and write and to speak aloud what I was reading.
Got it.
So I would get called in the class from the teacher and say, okay, read chapter 3, page 4, whatever, the first paragraph. And I would stand up and read and just stutter and stumble because it was really hard for me to read the words. Mm-hmm. And so I just never wanted to speak. I was just like terrified because everyone would make fun of me.
Sure.
And so I was just like, I just want to listen, you know? And I think I became very aware of what people were saying, and I would really watch their energy and study people. And I think that's what I became good at, was studying people's energy, their words. I mean, I'm fascinated. When I go to events, I love watching speakers, and I more love watching what they're doing mm-hmm. and what they're not saying than what they are saying.
Got it.
And I'm studying how they're affecting people. The angles, the moments, the phrases, the tonality, like the pauses. I'm studying what is effective. Not like, oh, they said that cool thing that I'm going to remember in 10 years. No, but how did they make me feel? Or how did they make me feel bad or good or whatever it is? And I try to study and mimic those approaches to being more effective in my life. So to come back full circle, be a great listener and ask great questions. And they can be simple questions, but just asking people, you know, is there anything you're struggling with in your business right now that you wish you weren't struggling with? Simple question.
Yeah.
What's your biggest pain right now in your business? What would you love to eliminate in your life? What would you love to add in your life? And then just let them talk. Don't interrupt, just let them talk and start thinking, okay, you know, I could really use, we're just really struggling with our customer support. Like, we're getting so many refunds and ticket requests, like something's off. And just listen to them. Well, tell me more. Why is that happening? well, what do you think could be better? Like, how could you improve that? And just keep asking questions and find a way to serve them. So for me, it's all about listening to what they really need and finding the solution to them as fast as possible. As a business owner, I really believe that that's all we're supposed to do is find solutions for people. And I think there was a great case study, I don't know, 10 years ago, probably right around the time we met with Zappos, where they talked about, you know, we're here to really just help people, whether they want to buy shoes or not. Like, someone called and asked for like a pizza place nearby. Right. And so they're like, got them the address or ordered the pizza for them. It's just like being in service to their biggest need in that moment, I believe is what we're supposed to be doing.
Great. And then, so, you know, the underdog that's listening right now and thinking, oh yeah, well, that's easy for you to say. I mean, where did they get started? And I mean, imagine it is partly of that listening, but how else do they go and figure out how to be the connector or the generous person if they want to be?
I think you got to work really, really hard. For me, you know, it was a year and a half of just on LinkedIn, 6 to 8 hours a day, reaching, first studying people's profiles, who they are, what they've done, and then reaching out to them with crafted emails specifically tailored to them. And building relationships one by one for a couple of years. I mean, I'm still doing this now, 8, 9 years later with my podcast, School of Greatness. I'm, you know, I've had over 530 something episodes, and I'm reaching out to people one by one, building relationships, asking what their biggest need is and saying, can I help promote you or the thing, the book you have, the movie you have, the product, whatever it is, can I support your biggest challenge right now by getting you on my show? And introducing you to an audience of people that could potentially buy, share, whatever it is you're looking to do, create awareness for something that you care about. And I'm doing the same thing, you know, 8, 9, 10 years later.
Right.
But it's every day just grinding it out, building relationships. And I try to create a structure for myself where I have a vision for the year, for the season, for the month, for the week. And then I create the game plan and structure daily of the action steps I need to take. And I think that's why what you do is probably the most powerful thing that people could apply, is you create that structure for people. That's the most important thing, is to have the structure, the outline for how to achieve it. Otherwise, it's just really hard to stay consistent. We talked about that earlier. There's the consistency of it. The structure is one thing. The consistency of the structure over many, many years. That's how you get started.
Now, that is brings me to a really great point here, which is, how do you say no? Because, you know, one of my favorite quotes from Warren Buffett is, the difference between successful people and very successful people is that very successful people say no to almost everything. And I can only imagine the amount of requests that you get for your time, for everything. Yeah. How do you say no, in addition to the clarity, when some things just seem so much like so much fun and you want to go that way?
I don't say no enough. I say yes too much. But this is kind of the season of life I'm in, where I'm building opportunities and I'm connecting with everyone still. And also, part of my business is to say yes, to have people on, to or have the right people on, and to do certain things. Now, I've created a system for myself, because I do get requests to do, let's say, a lot of interviews for one thing, or to write guest posts or whatever it may be. And 7, 8 years ago, I would have said yes to everything because I was looking for more exposure. But now, kind of like the smaller podcast, people are just starting a podcast. A lot of those people ask me to come on.
Yeah.
And when you don't have an audience, it's just hard to say yes to everyone when I don't have enough time to do it. I'd love to say yes. And so I create a structure for myself. I say, you know, anyone who has, I'll reply to them and say, thank you, I'm flattered. And for anyone who has 250,000 downloads a month on their podcast, I'm happy to say yes to.
Great.
And so I just say, if you have that, let me know and we'll make it happen. 99% of the time they don't.
Yeah.
And so that's just kind of the way I say no.
Right. But hey, but it's not like the closed door is closed, you know, let's just stay in touch.
Yeah, of course. And listen, I get it. When I started out, I was trying to get people too. So I understand it's going to happen, but it's just, like you said, if I don't say no to everything else, then my vision won't come true, you know?
What's one of the most interesting and exciting things that has come out of something that you didn't think was going to lead to anything, or something that you maybe should have said no to, or you thought you should have said no to, and you just said, yeah, I'll do it anyways. And then the next thing you know, it leads to a great relationship or to some amazing result for some people. Oh, man. I'm sure there's so many things
that I'm like, know have happened. I'm trying to think of one thing specifically. Oh man. I don't know. I've just like replying to people literally on Twitter or Instagram, like people will screenshot it and post it and say like, this made my month.
Yeah.
Like this happened yesterday for me. And just that alone, and then people will follow up and say, hey, you know, I bought your book because of this and it changed my life, or then I went to your event, or then I bought your course. And it's just like the ripple effect of just replying to someone and trying to build engagement with people, like, just makes them feel like you care.
Right.
And then they just want to support you back.
Have you ever gotten used to that as a small town guy from Ohio?
It's so weird, man.
Emails and
dude, it's so weird. Like, if you would have told me this would have happened years ago, it's just so weird. But even last night, I was at a dinner with a bunch of guys, a bunch of, you know, influencers in the business space. And as I was leaving, we were like all getting our car at the valet or whatever. And one guy just like interrupts, like randomly walking down the street, goes, hey, Lewis, I'm just like a big fan. Like, my dad's here. Do you mind if he takes a photo of us real quick? I like listen to the podcast every day. And it's just like so weird to me,
right,
that people recognize me. Like, it's not all the time, but it's just right. Whenever it does, I'm just like, gosh, it's so weird. And I'm so appreciative.
Right.
Like, I'm so grateful that someone wants to say hi to me, because what I've done has made an impact in some way. Whether they listen to the podcast, the book, or watch videos on YouTube. And here's the cool thing is, like, you know, I say I'm building so many things right now, and part of me wants to say, you know what, I'm just going to do audio podcasts and that's it. That's the one thing I'm going to do. I'm going to build it up and make the biggest thing ever. But so many people say, you know what, I found you on YouTube and I only watch you on YouTube.
Got it.
And I didn't do a video for a long time because I was like, I just want to be great at audio. And some people say, you know what, I didn't know who you were until someone gave me your book. And then I started listening to your podcast, and then this and this. So I think, you know, I want to have a suite of opportunities to be able to connect with people in different ways that work for them. So it's hard. It's like a balance of, like, what do you say yes to? What do you say no to? Like, what makes sense?
Right.
And it all comes back to getting clarity on your vision, which I know you do great for people. It's like, what is the thing you really want? What's your philosophy for your life, your business? What do you want to achieve financially? The impact? How many people do you want to reach? And getting clear on that first. And then we can figure out, okay, is it a book? Is it a podcast? Is it a video? Is it a sales thing? Is it courses? Whatever it is, events. Then we can figure out the mechanism based on what works for you and your vision. But if we don't get clarity first on how we want to feel every day, the experiences we want to have every day, the people we want to be surrounded with every day, then really the actions we're taking are going to be mindless unless we are focused on something clear that is resonating to us.
Now, sometimes people like to resist and push back on that. Oh, I don't want to be so structured. I don't want to be so focused on something. I just want to, you know, let things come to me. What have you seen there?
When I see that, I see a pinball machine life. I see them bouncing from thing to thing and never really going in one direction. It's like you're just constantly hitting against walls. Oh, this looks cool. Oh, that looks cool. Oh, let me go back over here. What have you done in the last 5-10 years of your life living that way? That is moved forward a progress with your business, humanity, your life. Now, I don't think anything's wrong with that if that's the way you want to live. If that's your vision, hey, sure. I just want to go with the flow. Cool. I think it's easier to create results when we know exactly what it is we want. Mm-hmm. If we don't know what we want, it's hard to get results.
Right. It's like, I don't know where I'm going to go, so I'm just going to walk around the streets.
And it's hard for people to support you. I feel like you do a disservice to the people around you, because if there's no clarity for you, how are they going to be able to help you? How are they going to be able to connect you with someone? How are they going to be able to give you solutions? How are they going to be able to give you feedback? If you're just like, well, I don't know, I'm just going to see where it goes. I'm just going to try this out for a little bit. I'll dabble in this. Right. It's hard to build a team around a lack of clarity. And it's hard to be great without a great team.
Right. So when you were just getting started, who were some of the people that you looked to as influence?
When I was starting, I looked at Tim Ferriss was a big influence at the time. Back in 2008, when I read his book in actually the Christmas of 2007. And so for that next couple of years, I was kind of like, it just opened me up to a whole new world I didn't even know was possible. Mm-hmm. It was like right in the transition of playing football and being like, what do I do now? To reading this book and being like, I didn't even know any of this was available for me. So it was like a whole new world opened up.
Right.
And it was a great catalyst for me to start researching and diving down the rabbit hole of like, oh, you can build an online business. You can do this. I didn't even know. I wouldn't say I subscribe to working 4 hours a week and this and that, but I subscribe to, you know, building something you love and building systems around it and all those other things.
Right.
And so for me, it was a powerful catalyst. Mm-hmm. It was a game changer. I read a lot of blogs at the time, like Pro Blogger and Chris Brogan and Guy Kawasaki. I guess those were kind of the major influencers then. Gary Vaynerchuk, even back then, I remember following some of his stuff. So those were kind of the early on people who were just talking about, Joel Kalm was another guy who were just talking about the stuff I was interested in.
Yeah.
And now I would say, I really am inspired by the energy and the results of The Rock.
Right.
I feel like he, whether you think he's a good actor or not, is irrelevant in my mind. Where he's come from I relate to his story because he tried to make the NFL. He didn't make it. His story is he had $7 in his pocket, and then he went on a journey to chase his dream of being a wrestler. Started from the bottom. It took him years to really get to where he was. Then he said, I want to try something else, and reinvented himself every 5 to 10 years to now being one of the most influential actors in the world.
Right.
When someone say he's not a good actor. But how do you do
beside
that?
Beside the point. Yeah, I mean, right? Really. I mean, what he's impacting people on
exactly.
Right now.
And so I kind of look at that. I'm like, I don't look at myself as really that talented in a lot of things, but I look at myself as like focused, hardworking, and willing to do whatever it takes. And I think I know he has that mentality, and that's what's something I'm inspired by, is he's all about we. He's like, we're going to do this. Let's lift up together. It's not about like, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to hire you all to like help me get there. It's like, we.
Got it.
And so for me to see a guy who went from sports to, you know, wrestling to acting, and to be so we-focused is just a reminder every day of like, can't do anything great on our own. Like, we need a powerful team of people that are way smarter than us to help us get to where we want to be so we can all be successful together. So it's just a great reminder about like, don't do everything on your own. Like, start to build your team early. Even if you don't have much, even if you're just starting out, find like an accountability partner or buddy. Find a a mentor that is willing to support you in some way in your local community. Find someone who's done something more than you to give you feedback over email once every few months, whatever it may be. Start small with a team and then continue to build.
Right. And then, so who would be like a really surprising influence on your life right now, whether it's an odd book that you read or somebody that's just helping you expand your mind in different ways that... people would not otherwise know to search for.
I mean, Paulo Coelho's The Alchemist has always been one of the most powerful stories for me. I read it at a time when I was going through transition and really needed to learn that the treasure is always within me and that it's always in front of myself and that I can always tap into it. And so I've always loved that book. I've actually never met Paulo, but I'd love to. I'm sure one day I could if I really wanted to. I just haven't tried to go down that path yet.
Sure.
But he's great. I mean, someone who I maybe people wouldn't think of is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Brene Brown's an inspiration of mine, to be honest.
Sure.
She's done an amazing job. I got a chance to interview her a couple weeks ago. Actually, the week before the hurricane happened, I was in Houston with her.
Oh, wow.
And interviewed her. And kind of her movement of vulnerability, I think, has been very powerful and healing for a lot of humans.
Yeah,
it's mostly connected to women who have been attracted to her message. And I really look at what she's done. And for me, trying to do that more for men, because I think a lot of men aren't willing to open up,
right?
Me included. You know, I write the stuff that I need the most help with. And yeah. I do the research on the stuff that I'm like, okay, this is fascinating to me because I suck at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get called pretty laced up too.
Yeah, exactly. So, so I think she's been amazing, inspiring. I mean,
yeah, her TED Talk is great. So if people haven't read her book or watched her TED Talk, it's definitely worth going for that. Now, I mean, that actually is a good segue into your next book, the Mask of Masculinity. People who come to the retreat, they're going to get a copy of this. Bedros has told me a little bit about it, but why don't you, because I was really just like, whoa, that's an interesting
different, yeah, different.
Walk us through it. Because your website's really cool for it.
Thanks, yeah. I mean, for me, I realized I wanted to tap, if I was going to do another book after my last one, I was like, okay, what's the thing that's going to be challenging for me? Like everyone's like, why don't you do a marketing or business or entrepreneur book or whatever? And I was just like, that just seems boring to me right now.
Okay.
And it just seemed too easy. And I was like, what's the thing I'm most terrified of? And I was like, it's myself. You know, I'm terrified of myself. You know, I'm terrified of like the stuff I've done in the past, you know, stuff I've been through, my shameful moments, the things I'm guilty of, the things I'm like not happy with about myself, the things I still do today as a man that I feel like, just why do I do those things sometimes in relationships or with other men or whatever? Like, why am I this way? Mm-hmm. Like, why am I protective sometimes or guarded or defensive or passive aggressive or vengeful, you know, when something happens? Why do I want to just like go and rage sometimes and just want to punch someone in the face? Like, why do I feel these things?
You don't feel that way right now, right?
No, I don't. But I just like, why? Why am I this way? I just wanted to know more. Mm-hmm. And so I said, you know what? I think this is something that's really important, not just for me, but for so many men that I was talking to. And going back to the roots of being a Midwest guy, a lot of Midwesterners, I feel like they're very loving, open people, but I think a lot of men who've played sports specifically go through this process of, you know, don't be a wussy, don't cry, don't show emotion, like get your ass up, be a man, do all these things. It's like conditioned over and over from sometimes from parents, from coaches, and then from peers. If you're like a kid and 8, 9, 10 years old and you're crying, if you're a boy around other boys, most of the time they're going to make fun of you. And to tell you, don't be a girl, don't be a pussy, don't be this, whatever it is. So you're just conditioned to, if I want to have friends, I have to be cool.
I have to have the armor on.
Yeah, I have to not show emotion. I have to make fun of other kids. I have to be bullied too. I have to do this, whatever. And that's not our human nature, I don't think. So again, I take full responsibility for my life, but I think it's challenging when there's conditioning and pressures and just like over and over of people shaming you for doing things that you feel like you want to do as a boy growing up. Mm-hmm. But I feel like women, young girls growing up, aren't shamed as much for expressing themselves. I feel like it's more acceptable in general for women to be able to cry or show emotion or express their feelings to a girlfriend. Whereas boys growing up in the Midwest, in general, I'm not saying everyone, and from my personal experience, I wasn't able to share my feelings. And I think a lot of boys around me weren't really able to share how they were really feeling. And in that process, for me, it built up a lot of pain and resentment and anger. Whereas I couldn't share and express verbally in a vulnerable way without being criticized or ridiculed. So I lashed out with anger, or by fighting or punching or pushing or whatever it was as when I was a kid growing up, or by isolation. And so for me, I realized like, wow, there was a lot of pain and suffering I went through that was self-inflicted that I didn't need to go through. Mm-hmm. And I'm still holding on to stuff now. And 2 years ago when I started the process of this book, I realized I was holding on to a lot more. So I wanted to, one, first heal myself and continue to like work through the stuff that I was struggling with as a man, mm-hmm. and as a human being, and figure out, okay, how can I simplify this so men can understand the different masks that we wear that hold us back and why we've been driven to make so much money or get bigger and faster and stronger or have sex with every girl we can or be the alpha male in any situation or go and get every degree that we can to prove that we're smarter than everyone else in the world, or become the ultimate joker where we're just constantly the funny guy. We're constantly making other people laugh. Like, why are we driven in any of these areas? Why do we wear these different masks of, you know, sexuality or anger or frustration? Or why do we take so many risks to risk our life? Why are we jumping off buildings and cliff diving and all these other things? Like, why are we driven to do the things we're doing as men?
And are we wearing these multiple, or are some guys wearing just one, or how does that work?
We're wearing multiple masks at different times.
Got it.
And the masks at some times are not bad. You know, the masks support us and serve us in a lot of ways. You know, for me, being an athlete mask, it served me to be a great athlete. But I think when it gets in the way of being able to open up and express myself, or just be able to have a conversation with my girlfriend in high school and just share what I'm going through, and I'm not able to because I wear that mask, it holds me back. It develops an amount of pain in my body, and it comes out in a negative way. So it's just being aware of the mask that we're wearing, first off, why we're wearing it, and that it's on. And recognizing, okay, this is the price I could be paying if I keep it on. This is how it could affect other people. This is how it could affect me if I wear this all the time. And how do I take it off and still feel safe, confident, powerful, protected, and all these things? Because we're wearing it to protect ourselves, or to prove we're worthy of something, or to show we're funny, or to show we've got some talent. But how can I take it off and just be truly who I am and still be the most powerful person in the room?
Yeah. You know, one of my clients, when I was a personal trainer, he said something about his brother. He said, that guy's comfortable in his own skin. And I was like, that's one of my goals in life, because, you know, I'm like you, you know, I don't know if the mask of drinking too much alcohol is in there, but I wore that mask for a long, long time.
Or the mask of just being in the gym all day.
Yeah.
And training all day. Like, you know, again, the guy who looks who you want to be like is the guy who's the most like real, authentic self, who just feels super comfortable in his skin. Like nothing really seems to faze him. When something's happening, he can kind of just like move people out of the way with ease. Like there's no, you know, he's just got it under control.
Yeah.
And it's because he's got himself, like his inner world is under control, and he feels comfortable and confident with who he is. And if stuff doesn't go the way he wants it to, it's like, okay, we'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. It's not just like stressful experience.
So what did you discover about yourself over that time? 2 years is plenty of learning time. So there must be a lot of evolution.
It really started even 4 years ago when I started kind of opening up about, you know, my sexual abuse experience growing up as a kid, about, you know, just sharing all the stuff that I went through growing up where I didn't want anyone to know about me because I was shameful of it. So that was about four and a half years ago. I started to open up and talk about things in general. And the amount of freedom I felt when I started to share was unbelievable. The amount of freedom I felt, the weight off my shoulders when I just started to be able to talk about stuff was like, wow, I didn't know I could do this. I didn't know I was able to talk and people were still going to love me and accept me. And it was like the thing I was scared of the most, which was people weren't going to accept me when they knew things about me, was complete opposite. Like they loved me even more.
Right. So it's Brené's message, right?
It's like they loved me even more. They were like, God, I thought so many things negative about you. Now I look at you as such like a hero, like a leader. I was like, what, really? Just by sharing like all the crap I've been through, you know,
right,
the things I'm scared of made me a hero to you. And then the beautiful thing is they started to reveal things to me that I never knew. Like my family members told me stuff that I never knew about them. My friends, you know, random strangers who would listen to my podcast when we talking about things would email me essays of like all the things they've gone through and say, I've never told a soul this. So when we become vulnerable and open up, and it doesn't mean we need to be crying every day and being whatever, weak or something, that's not vulnerable to me. It's just being who you are and sharing your authentic self. When we do that, I feel like we attract the right people, and those people are willing to open up and trust you even more. So if you want to gain the ultimate trust, be vulnerable. If you want to be, you know, have the most powerful relationships, be vulnerable. Because it's hard to really fully trust someone if they're always perfect all the time. And if they never like show vulnerability. It's hard to have a friend who's just always on. Who's never just like, God, you know what? I'm just going through a lot of stress right now in my relationship. Or I feel terrible. I've just been like drinking a lot and I just don't know how to get out of it. And I just feel like a little scared, man. I'm just not sure about this. If someone doesn't do that and they're having their problem for years and they're not willing to talk about it, it's just hard to relate to that person. It's hard to connect and fully trust them.
Yeah. Yeah. And whenever you do say that to somebody, and whenever people say that stuff to you, all you can think of, how can I help this person?
That's it. How can I support? Yeah. We create a level of compassion and empathy when someone opens up and vulnerable. If someone is showing emotion and tears, usually, if we have a heart, we're able to, you know, reflect that and show some tender compassion as well, unless we're so guarded with our masks that we don't even like receive their vulnerability. And some people are that way.
Sure.
They're so protected with their masks on that if someone's emotional or sad or comes to them, they may blow them away because they're not comfortable sharing stuff they've been through. So that's the challenge. When you find someone who's not open in return, then it makes you want to put the mask back on and be like, oh, you don't think I'm cool?
Because you put it back on even stronger.
Stronger.
Yeah.
And this is a challenge with relationships from intimate relationships with men and women, is that from my experience and the experience of a lot of people I've talked to, when a woman is making a man wrong for who they are over and over, making them wrong for what they're not doing, it makes them want to put their mask back on stronger and just protect themselves and defend themselves. Be like, they don't get me. They don't understand me. I'm just going to leave it on. Why would I open up? Why would I give more if you're just going to make me wrong? So in the book, we talk about examples for women who are in intimate relationships with men, how to get men to take the mask off without making them wrong. So I think that's a lot of the problem with relationships today and marriages. It's just like making people wrong.
Yeah.
And I want people to be made wrong. And it goes for men making women wrong too. You know, it's, women wear masks just as much.
Well, I was just with a friend recently. I mean, they have kids, so they have a long marriage, and it almost blew up because a little thing like a centimeter big, the person was made to feel wrong because of it, and that wasn't corrected. And the next thing you know, is 2 inches, and then the gulf became huge, and there had to be a lot of suffering and healing over a short amount of time in order for them to come back together. But it all started because it was just everybody was feeling wrong a tiny bit.
And then they made it wrong more and more. And
right. And that and the conversation and communication wasn't there. And so
that's tough, man.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think men in general get to communicate a little better in general. Mm-hmm. Again, some men are doing it amazing. And I'm not trying to say every man is like this. But from my experiences and the men I've grown up with, you know, we've been conditioned to not express ourselves. And that's why the suicide rate is higher with men over women. I think a lot of it is because men don't have an outlet to communicate. And so we bottle up in general, pain, fears, angers, resentments, and we either lash out physically because we can't express it. Because when we do express it, we're told we're weak, we're soft, we're pussy, we're this, whatever. And sometimes women say they want men to express it. And then when they do, they're like, man up. You know what I mean? They're like, quit being this. You just need to like own it and accept it, be the man. And so it's very confusing when men want to make their woman happy and want to please their woman and want to like be loved by their woman. And so when they're trying to express their pain and their sadness about something, and then women are like, you just need to man up in your life, like, and just own this stuff and just take it and be the provider and be this. It's like, it's conditioning men again to be a certain way.
Yeah.
Which is like, okay, I'm not going to express myself. I'm just going to bottle this up. And then when I feel anger, resentment, or frustration, like one day I'm going to hit somebody. I'm going to lash out. I'm going to have road rage. I'm going to do whatever. I'm going to drink myself to numbness, right? A lot of these things stem in other ways when we just can't communicate. That's why I think, that I don't know, I've like places where men can just go and like bro it out and talk about real stuff. There's not like these, there's all these women tribe groups where women come together and have like retreats and do these things and like talk, which I think is super healthy. But men aren't doing that enough.
No, we go to UFC fights.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I did like on your website that you have that section of, you know, what's a woman going to get from this book? Yeah. Because that was my first thought. Well, what is a woman going to get from this book? So you mentioned a little bit about how to help the guy take the mask off at the right time. Yeah. What else are a couple other points that they're going to get out of the book?
I think it's really first, women are going to understand the men in their lives better.
Okay.
So you're going to understand why your father, your brother, your husband, your boyfriend, whatever, your son is acting a certain way, why they're driven a certain way, but the psychology behind it, based on all the interviews I've done in the psychologists, why boys become men the way they are a certain way. It's not by accident. So it's going to first teach you how to just a little bit understand a little bit better first. Why? Understand maybe what the mask, which mask they're wearing then. So we'll get a description of all the different masks. And you can be like, oh, yep, that's my husband. That's my father. Like, he wears that mask a lot.
But it's also a warning sign of, oh, my son is going down that path, which I never thought about.
Yes.
Because that's probably, you know, the most important person for to read this book is perhaps the mom.
Moms, for sure. Yes. And then it's okay, exercises at the end of each chapter, each mask, there's exercises for some things you could do to start getting them to take the mask off without making them wrong. Mm-hmm. So they'll just open up a little bit better. And with me, it starts with acknowledging first, not focusing on this is what you're doing wrong. Stop doing this.
That's just going to shut you down even more.
It's going to be like, screw you, I'm going to wear it.
24/7.
Screw you, mom, I'm going to the gym all night long. All right. I'll see you like in the morning. You know what I mean? It's just like, instead acknowledging all the good in the men that they are doing. Like, gosh, I just really love when you come home and you take a minute to like hug our kids. It's like the greatest thing to see.
Yeah.
And just like reminding them and acknowledging them. This is the hardest thing, I think, for anyone, not just women, but for anyone to acknowledge someone, even when you're really frustrated or upset about something you're not getting from them. To focus on acknowledging is hard. It's really challenging to do.
So, right, because most people are too busy and they're thinking about themselves.
Yeah, they're thinking about what they're not getting, or thinking about what's not working well, or what they're upset with about the guy, what they've done. And so, again, really try to focus on acknowledgement first, because that's going to disarm the man first. Yeah. It's going to disarm him and be like, oh, she sees me for the good that I am doing.
Yeah.
Because a lot of arguments come from the woman saying, like, here's what you haven't done, here's what you need to do more of, and the man feeling like, does she not see all the hard work I do?
Right.
I'm out working 9 hours a day. I'm staying up late. I'm traveling to commute. I'm this and this.
Taking the kids to sports.
Well, I'm doing all this and none of it's being acknowledged. And so he's like, screw this. You know what I mean? And I'm going to do what I want. I'm going to go watch TV and drink a beer or whatever it is. So focus on the acknowledgement if you can, which is hard to do.
Got it. So what was, of all the masks in there, what was one where you were like, oh, I didn't even realize I was doing this? Or the one that just you were like, you needed the most help with and you were just got the most relief from learning about? I love asking these questions. You're like, I don't know, Craig, leave me alone.
I think the aggression mask, you know, for me, I still work on this daily, man, where my entire life, I felt like I was being attacked by bullies, by, you know, other athletes, whatever it may be, teammates, teachers, parents. I just felt like I was always attacked. That was a story I told myself. And so in those attacks, I needed to defend myself and fight back. And that started to bleed over into the business world. I remember early on, like someone got in like this Twitter attack with me. Like in 2009 or 10. And for like literally 2 days, I obsessed over like replying back to everything and like proving right and doing this and like backing up what I was talking, whatever it was.
Right.
And I remember the frustration and this resentment and the anger I felt from like these 2 days and how it consumed my life. And someone messaged me and said, you gotta let this go, man. Like this has gone too far. Like privately, he was like, you just got to like laugh at this and like let it go. And I was like, no, but how do you do that? I was like, no, but he's like attacking me and he's like questioning everything I've done and like questioning my manhood, right? Or whatever. But I realized like, man, what's the price I'm paying by trying to defend myself? Like I'm losing out on my vision. Like my vision is not having its needs met because I'm spending 2 days of energy, frustration on something that doesn't even matter. So I started the process of just like learning about whenever I feel attacked, and this happens almost every day on social media for me,
sure,
like constantly. Like,
I'm sure it's happening.
Right even now. Even in this topic about masculinity, I just knew right when I started posting stuff, it was going to happen. You know, women are attacking me, men are attacking me, people of different cultures, people of different races, religions. Like I'm getting attacked by everyone. Even yesterday, someone was like, I posted like the cover of my book and someone goes, yeah, white male privilege. You've probably never worked a day in your life. What do you know about this? And I'm just like, and I look at him, he's got like no followers and he's just like, whatever, a scammy dude, whatever. But I'm just like, this is like what people are going to think, you know, until they read it, until they know my story, until they know stuff,
yeah,
they're just going to judge. And so as opposed to being like, I hate you and like replying to this troll.
Well, they never say it to you in your face, to your face, of course, as no anonymous internet coward ever would.
Yeah, exactly. But it's just, it is what it is, man. But I've even had people text me and say, like, attack me. Women have attacked me about this stuff and they haven't even read the book yet. And I'm just like, just read something first.
Well, they judge it by this cover, so.
Exactly, which is a interesting cover, which my face is blown up on the cover. And there's a whole other topic of like the reason why we did that, which for me, I was like, you know, I don't want it to be about me. I'd rather it be just like text and like an image of something. My publishers are like, well, we want to connect with people and we want them, you know. So it's a whole another topic of like trying to like not have my ego involved, but like sell books or whatever.
Right.
So people are definitely judging it by the cover of like a white man's face.
Yes. There you go.
Talking about masculinity. But listen, we all go through inner battles that no one knows about. And this really isn't about me. This is about all the people that have gone through these different masks, all the psychologists that I talk to, and the research that we do. And in every chapter, I use myself as an example of how I've not been a man, mm-hmm. how I've not like lived up to the definition of masculinity, how I've fallen short as a man throughout my entire life. So it's talking about how I failed essentially as a man. In every mask that I've worn, I use example from every mask in the book of how I've lived that way and what it's done to hurt me in all areas of my life. And when I take it off, what's available? And then giving people practical lessons on how to take it off for themselves and what's available in your life when you do. And that's what it's about.
That's really great. And then so, you know, as you probably have more attacks on this book than,
anything.
Than you have on the other ones. But this one is without a doubt to make a deeper impact
that's
on
the whole
more
point.
People, right?
That's the whole point. And I knew going into this, everyone's been like, wow, this is like kind of risky. It's kind of like, it's different. It's a whole different like topic than what you've always talked about. And I'm like, but that's like interesting to me. Yeah. It's interesting. It's fascinating. It's scary. It's vulnerable for me.
Yeah.
And if I want to really push myself as a human being to see what's possible, and if I want to make the greatest impact, and my vision is to serve 100 million people a week, if I want to do that, I can't be safe every single day for the rest of my life. You know, I have to be open and revealing and willing to put in the work on stuff that is hard for other people to do. Yeah. So that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah. Our friend Jason Capital said something at his event recently. He said, disclosure is disarming. And I think, you know, this book is going to prove that. It's going to help so many people. And it's very much like Oprah. I mean, yeah. Oprah has put everything out there.
That's it.
And who's the greatest, you know, influencer of women today?
Oprah,
yeah,
for sure.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, sir. And everybody who's going to be at the retreat is going to get a copy of this book. And
I'm
it's going
pumped.
To be, yeah, it's going to be fantastic. They're going to hear more from you on the Friday of the Perfect Life Retreat.
If you guys haven't signed up yet, I'm assuming people listening to this, not all of them have signed up, right?
Not everybody, no.
You need to sign up. You need to sign up right now. Send Craig an email that you did sign up. I'm going to give you a big hug. You're going to get a copy of my book. And I'm telling you, it's going to blow you away. Every time I'm around Craig, I just feel like he gives me clarity on my life in a better way. So make sure you guys sign up. It's going to be transformational. And I would even be willing to guarantee, how much are the tickets?
$1,000.
$1,000. If you are
and
not-
And they get to bring a guest for free. So really, it's $500.
$500.
Between two people.
I would even say that if you're not fully happy and you don't get some idea or some strategy or build a relationship with someone that's going to help you build your business or your life to the next level, heck, I would refund the ticket. I think it's going to be that powerful. So I would give you a money-back guarantee for anyone who doesn't feel like they got something of value out of this experience. So really, there's no risk for you not to attend.
Well, I appreciate that. And certainly, everybody's guaranteed that way. And
well, they already are from you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So, so Craig will guarantee it then.
Double guarantee.
Double guarantee.
But the most important thing is you have Lewis and myself. We're really bringing our life's work mm-hmm. to this event. I mean, he just explained what his is. And you all know that mine is helping you get that structure and clarity.
Yeah, yeah. I'm telling you guys, Craig is one of the best guys in terms of organization and structure for your business. Like literally, if you haven't been to an event of his yet or spent any time with him, don't wait. He's not paying me to say this, but there's no one I know who is as structured and organized as you. And it's like, you've been doing this for over a decade since I met you.
Yeah.
Of like hour, 2 hours every single morning, like writing, getting clear. And if people were like, well, I don't know how to create this contract. I don't know how to write this book or do this project or this course. You're going to learn all these things on how to set your life up and structure your business from Craig and other people, myself and other people during this event. So make sure you guys sign up. It's going to be definitely powerful.
Well, thank you very much, Lewis. And yeah. Make sure that everybody listening, you get a copy of the book. What's the website?
Maskofmasculinity.com.
All right. So you can pre-order right now. Get a bunch of copies for yourself, for all the men in your life and all the women in your life too,
yes.
So that everybody understands one another and they have that vulnerability and everybody's relationships become so much stronger, right?
That's it, man.
Awesome. Perfect. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Wow, what a show. Thank you for hanging out with Lewis and myself on our deep dive into becoming great and having a powerful, positive impact on the world. I just can't wait to hear his presentation at the Perfect Life Retreat. I really loved what we talked about there at the end. So make sure you get your ticket to the big event. It's November 9th and 10th in San Diego. Visit perfectliferetreat.com today. And when you buy one ticket for yourself, you'll get a ticket for a friend for free. So you guys can split the cost or you can give it to somebody and bring them to the event. It is going to be a game changer and a life-changing 2 days of time with Lewis, myself, Bedros Koulian, Kerry Wilkerson, and hundreds of other high performers like yourself. So let me know what you think of today's episode. Just email support@earlytorise.com or send me a message on Instagram.com/realcraigvalentine or at twitter.com/craigvalentine. Thanks for listening to Early to Rise Radio. Please head over to iTunes and rate today's show and share it with your friends. And don't forget, Lewis Howes and I will be helping you dominate your days for greatness when you join us at my big event this November. Grab one of the last remaining seats at perfectliferetreat.com.